So now in this slide, I'm talking about compensation. First bullet point says compensation refers to those HRM duties related to monetary and other rewards of the employees. Simple, easy to understand. Point number two, HRM professions are a part of developing wage and salary administrations, salary systems. Now, a point which I would like to quickly add is HRM professions usually focus more on their HR processes because they are experts in that. But if you are one of those HR professionals who is handling recruitment selection, giving letters to people and also talking to prospective employees to join, then a bit of, I would not say bit, a little bit more about wages and salary systems you must know. Because you are the entry person with whom the prospective employee is interacting. And if you are not clear about it, there is an ambiguity, then the person will not develop a trust in the company. HR professionals have got a major role to play because they are the PR people of the company. Through them, the people join the company. So they must know the compensation part of it also pretty well. The last bullet point in this slide is their aim is to establish wage and salary levels that maximize company's investment in manpower. So who is to be paid how much so that the person is motivated enough so that the company's investment in them is brought to the highest possible level. Should I pay 10,000 to this person so that by paying 10,000 he is more than satisfied and he gives me an output which I expect more than what he is expected from me. This is what is broadly mentioned by this. Okay. Continuing further, compensation is successfully accomplished with the performance-based incentives. So when you perform, everybody expects a reward with the performance. It can be incentives or increment or whatever. So once it is accomplished, once you reward them, then the compensation seems to be properly accomplished because people feel good about it. HRM managers need to create compensation equity within the organization that does not hamper motivation and morale of the employees. What is meant by compensation equity? At the same level people are working, or DGM level or DM or deputy managers level. Now at the same level, regardless of which department you're working in, there should be a certain amount of parity, equity. In one department, HOD, head of the department, is being paid, let's say, 10 lakhs. In another department, he is also HOD, same job profile, but in a different function altogether. If he is being paid less or more, this creates inequity. So there must be a certain amount of equity. Equity also means in proportion with the work functions that they are doing. In case I am paying some other HOD more, then I must have a reason why I am paying him more. Now that is properly to be structured. It's very important. Okay. This slide talks about maintenance. Maintenance involves activities related to employee benefits, safety and health, worker management relationship. It's about an ongoing process after the person is joined the company, how to keep him motivated, how to give him the benefits so that he is in a position to take things ahead in a much more motivated way, etc., etc. Employee benefits are non-incentive oriented compensation, such as health insurance, free parking, which is non-taxable part of the compensation. Employee benefits by this definition is simple. It does nothing to do with your work. It is a feel good with the company likes to give you to retain you in the company so that you don't go to a competitor. And health insurance, school fees for your children, free parking of your vehicle, whatever. This is coming under this. The three major categories of benefits are employee services such as purchasing plans, Sodexo coupons, etc. You must be knowing about it. Recreational activities and legal services, vacations, holidays and other allowed absences and insurances, retirement and health benefits. This is the feel good for the human being so that he starts feeling that it's worth it working for the company. The company cares for me. Regardless of whether he is performing well or not well, this is something that is given by the company. Continuing further in maintenance, human resources maintenance activities related to safety and health entails compliance with employment laws that protect employees from workplace hazards, particularly true in production units, chemical plants, etc., where you're working with risky situations. So you should ensure that HR maintenance is taken care of. They are given proper safety and health assurances so that they are able to work without any problems. Maintenance duties related to worker management relations entail working with labor unions, handling grievances, devising systems to foster cooperation, bringing about a conviviality of working, ensuring that, you know, there is no them and us feeling, ensuring that the workers don't feel cheated, the management doesn't feel cheated, ensuring that there's a trust development. Activities in this area include contract negotiation, developing policies for grievance handling, and administering programs to enhance communication cooperation. In short, ensuring that you're on a day-to-day informal interaction with these people so that they don't feel let down. And at the same time, everything gets done as per both sides' expectations. Okay? Focus on HRM. Businesses rely on three major resources. The first one is physical resource such as materials and equipments, and money also included. It's taken as a second point in this slide. Financial resources such as cash, credit and debt. And the third one is human resources. We discuss the same thing in principles of management as the four M's: men, machine, materials and money. So here we are put into three categories: physical resource, materials and equipments, financial resources, cash, credit and debt, human resources, employees. Out of this, all of us know by now that human resources make or break an organization. So it's the most important resource to be handled, to be managed. HRM is a tool to make optimum use of human resources, to foster individual development and comply with the government mandates, government as well as company mandates, which is all the rules and regulations. Taking it further, expert R. Wayne Pace identifies seven underlying assumptions that provide a foundation and direction for HRM. First one is acknowledgement of individual worth. Validate, acknowledge, accept the fact that every individual is worthy of doing something. Give him the self-esteem that he deserves. Point number two, employees as resources can learn new skills and ideas to take up higher positions. All human beings are learners. They learn. Some people learn fast, some people learn slow. Some people learn willingly, some people learn unwillingly. But human beings have got this capacity that they know that when I have to learn, I will learn. So this particular aspect has to be understood. And employees are seen as resources that can learn new skills and ideas to take up higher positions. Quality of work life is a legitimate concern. At the workplace when you go, you should have a very good quality of working conditions. It's important. Last point, number four, the need for continuous learning of skills and talents. Continuous learning. That's what we come across as a learning organization. That's where the learning part of L&D comes. Continuous learning. Taking it further, point number five, supporting the existence of an organized HRM is in a constantly changing environment by facilitating employee adaptation. Underline the word adaptation. When we join a company, a new company, the place is new, it takes time for us to adapt, to get used to the company's way of working, the habits of different people, certain things they do, certain rituals. Now that is an important part of HRM, to see that when the company is going through changes, which is what is happening today, the HRM has to ensure that the employee is also able to adapt to the changes. That sort of a supporting thing you need to give. Take the case of COVID right now. Employee adaptation has happened because companies have become extremely empathetic, say work from home. It's a form of a lovely employee adaptation. It means I care for you, you work from home and we'll take things ahead, right? Number six, employee satisfaction. Employee satisfaction is two-way traffic. Companies give a lot of things to employees. Employees themselves have to feel that they're satisfied. It's an individual feeling. But we must do everything to ensure that the employee satisfaction takes place. Different strokes for different folks. Every employee is satisfied for a different reason. So we must know why employee X is satisfied, why employee Y is satisfied. They may not be satisfied for the same reasons. So we must know them better. The last seventh point, HRM encompasses a much broader scope than technical training. Definitely. Technical training means what? I'm training you into the skills of the domain to which you belong. I am training you in the skills of the domain to which you belong. If you are an IT person, I am training you into IT superior skills, into some new language or something, right? It's not just that, it is much more than that. In the HRM book, you must have come across three different types of skills which we learn in an organization: technical skills, human skills, and conceptual skills. So HRM encompasses not just technical, but human as well as conceptual skills, which is all about soft skills, about the human behavior, about the human emotions, etc. Here we talk about the role, positions, and structure of HRM department. In personal management, again, two experts, Paul Greenlaw and John Cole, describe three distinct interrelated fields of interest addressed by HRM discipline. There are three distinct interrelated fields of interest addressed by HRM. One is human relations, which is involving individual motivation, leadership, and group relationships. It's all about intrapersonal, interpersonal, intergroup, etc. And also about how groups are led and managed. Within the group, how the relationships are among people. This is one important part of human relations. Second thing is organization theory, which is involving how is the job design? What are the managerial control systems we have? How is the work flowing? Two companies from the same industry will have two different organization theory way of operating. In one, the job design will be a certain way. 8 steps may be there. In another company, the same job function to be completed may have 9 steps or 20 steps. So there's a second controlling factor. Third one is decision making. Very tricky. Acquisition, development, compensation, and maintenance of human resources. How do we take these decisions? Decisions are very, very tricky. Decisions have got a huge amount of emotional element. The people who take the decision may collect data. At the time of taking a decision, there's an accountability factor. And that weighs heavily on the manager or the executive who's taking the decision. So, Paul Greenlaw and John Cole were talking about three distinct interrelated fields of interest. All these three are interrelated. Wrong decision, right theory, right human relation, still the company can go to a toss. So all the three have to be aligning with each other, right? Taking it further, HRM department responsibilities other than related legal and clerical duties can be classified into one: individual. It helps employees identify strengths and weaknesses and address them for the better. It's about the person, the individual, the employee. Second is organizational aspect, fostering a successful system that maximizes human and other resources. Third, career. You are there for a certain path, matching the individual with the most suitable jobs and career paths. Right person for the right job. Right? Taking it further, HRM department responsibilities other than related to legal and clerical duties can be classified into: one, the position of HRM departments is ideally near the theoretical organization center with maximum access to all divisions and management. What do you mean by theoretical organization center? Theoretical means there is something called an organizational power center. The organization is deciding certain things. They have certain things to be done and not done. So that is something which should be understood by the HR department, and they must go along with that. So that what the organization expects at the top level is actually delivered by them. Depending upon the organization structure, there may be layers of HRM managers or just a few. A large company, large IT company like TCS may have a number of HR managers. A small company need not have it. So depending upon the need of the organization, you can have different layers. Taking it further, whatever be the size of the organization, the human resource department must be easily available for all employees. This is a very important thing. Any HR person should be available to the employees at any given time for consultations, clarifications, collaborations with the company's goals. Any doubts, any type of grievances, you are the sounding board, you are the person to whom people will come to you, like a doctor. And it is your role to ensure that you are interacting with them satisfactorily and they don't feel let down. Structure of HRM departments differs from company to company, it should be differs, D-I-F-F-E-R-S, from company to company, depending upon the type and size of the organization. Obviously, large organizations will have a department, HR department, which each function separately, separate sections. Manpower planning will be one department with say 8 or 10 or 20 employees. Then the next department, which is to do with jobs, job evaluation will be another department. Training and development will be third department, third division. All of them will be having a large company like TCS or Infosys, maybe having a number of, you know, sections of the HR itself. There may be one, two or three floors only HR. But in a smaller company, that may not be the case. You may have less people. In a very tiny company, one HR person may be handling everything. Right? Now we come to evaluation of HRM methods. Evaluation of HRM method involves calibrating how efficiently the HRM methods are working towards the organization needs. Self-explanatory. Evaluation includes both internal and external assessments. Internal to the company and external to the outside world. Internal evaluation focuses on cost versus benefits of the HRM methods. So there's a cost incurred or an investment incurred. And what are the benefits we are coming out of it? We should evaluate. For example, if there's a training program being conducted for, say, senior managers, there's a cost involved in the training program. What are the benefits out of that? What am I expecting out of it? That evaluation I need to do before, during, and after. External evaluation focuses on overall benefits of the HRM methods in achieving company goals. Internal evaluation is internal to the HR department and the HR functions. External means for the whole company. My role as an HRM person, how is it benefiting the whole company and the goals? That is what is the external part of it. The authors of Human Resources Management posit four factors, the four C's as you call it. Commitment, competence, cost effectiveness and congruence. Commitment, competence, cost effectiveness and congruence. One model. Commitment addresses what, to what extent policies enhance the commitment of the people. The company's policies have got a direct impact on the commitment people have to the organization. The policies are in line with the expectations of the employees, in line with the motivation of the employees, in line with the career developments, in line with the desires and their wants and needs, then the commitment goes up. If they are treated well, the commitment goes up. Competence, the extent to which the HRM policies attract and retain and develop employees. Competence of the employee will develop depending upon how the HRM policies are structured, which is attracting, retaining and developing employees. Cost effectiveness. It measures the monetary effectiveness of policies in terms of wages, benefits, absenteeism, etc. How are the monetary part of it, which is used by the HR, effective in bringing about effective ways of administering wages, benefits, absenteeism, etc. You announce a certain type of an incentive scheme. How is it cost effective? That part of it should also be determined in this cost effectiveness. Congruence. It determines how HRM policies create and maintain cooperation between different groups within and outside the organization. Are we walking the talk? Are we creating a type of a cellular department where we are doing something good, but it is not affecting anybody else? No. So are we smoothly congruent with what is expected? Continuing further. In addition to advanced data gathering and analysis techniques, several simple observations can be made that provide insights into the general effectiveness of the company's HR. Underline the word observations. Observations cannot be evaluated in figures. Observations are something that is made subjective there. I may observe something about XYZ. You may observe something about XYZ. It can be a person or a particular process also. These observations matter. Just to give you a live example, my colleague is standing behind the camera. Okay, I observe that he's doing a great job. Now this observation may be subjective, but what is great for me? The effectiveness of the whole recording is going on so well according to me. Very diligent, very observant and very systematic is what he's doing. Now that is observation. Just to give a live example, this observation is something which we need to develop, and this observation is objective, not subjective. Not because I like him. There's a process laid down. In the process, I'm fitting in, he's also fitting in, and we are with the goal. That's the observation we're talking about. So there are several things which we need to understand in simple observations. It's not only data gathering. Okay? Furthermore, the average speed at which job vacancies are filled in indicates whether or not the organization has acquired the necessary talents and competencies. Underline the word average speed. Are we waiting too long for an employee to join us? Something is wrong with the way we are doing things. Are we getting people as soon as possible, at the same time leaving as soon as possible? Again, not good. When we say speed, means what we mean is, are we getting our expectations done at the proper time, at the proper moment? Right? Other measures of HRM success includes employee complaints and customer satisfaction statistics, health insurance, employee compensation claims, and independent quality ratings. All the other things involving employees, their complaints, their grievances, their health insurance, all this is a part of the HRM thing. They are supposed to be anchors to that. They act as facilitators. It's important. Taking it further, in addition, the number of significant innovations made each year suggests HRM success at fostering an environment that rewards new ideas and encourages change process. How is HRM responsible for innovation? When they take a right type of a person to the organization, that person has got certain open-mindedness to be willing to change when the change is required. He is a person who is willing to be an innovative tooth in the wheel. Then things become very good. So at the entry point, when I realize that I need people who could be future innovators, who could be in line with what we want, that is something that the HRM has to take it on itself. Okay, so it's a very overall broader picture. The number of significant innovations made each year suggests HRM success at fostering an environment that rewards new ideas and encourages change process. The department may be doing the rewards where the innovation is going on, but HR has got a role to play, because HR has to understand the significance of that, both from the entry point of view and also from the way they are fostering the innovative behavior. Companies also must assess effectiveness of HRM programs by their impact on the overall business success. This is self-explanatory. Companies must ensure that they have the right amount of properly skilled employees performing company goal-based tasks. This also is already told earlier, so you know it very well. Let's go to the next one. Forces changing HRM. Now, this is something which we are facing right now ever since 1990s. So reading from the slide, in 1990s, several forces were shaping and transforming the broad fields of HRM. Today we are in 2020, and in the last about 20 years, you can see that changes are going much more rapid than before. The first key force was new technologies, particularly information technology, IT. IT brought about decentralization of communication, shake up of existing paradigms of human interaction and organization theory. We had tall organizations, they have become flat. IT has made it happen. We had people working with very complex stuff, now IT has made it easy. Take an example of engineering. I am a mechanical engineer, and when I was doing designing in one of the companies where I was working, we had to do designing manually. There was no calculators even. Calculators came much later. When the IT came, the designing is now done by the sophisticated CAD and CAM process. Computer-aided design and computer-aided manufacturing is also going on. So IT has brought about that shakeup in production also. Satellite communications, computers and networking systems are facilitating rapid changes. It's obvious. I don't have to explain this. We are all going through that. These technologies helped blur the lines between work time and personal times. All IT guys listening to me, you will agree. You do not know where your work time starts and ends. You finish your work officially from 9 to 5 in the office. You may sit late or you may even go home, but you're still continuing working. You know why? Because you're working with different time zones. A typical IT guy working in a, say, company which is having customers or clients from, say, US or from Australia, he has to work on different times other than Indian standard time. So because the IT is there, what is happening is it has actually made a sort of a, it blurred the line between work time and personal time. Not good in a way, but at the same time, it is also good in terms of increasing the effectiveness of the function of the organization. It's mentioned they're working from home, which has now become common at this current stage at which we are. HRM professionals began adopting management by objectives approach to human resources instead of management by site. MBO, as you have learnt already, is a popular tool used by the none other than the celebrated Peter Drucker, Dr. Peter Drucker. We learnt it in Principles of Management, right? So now what is it? In a nutshell, MBO means right person for the right job, one-on-one, goals, performance, accountability. The objective of the top management at the top goes down to the person at the operation level. So there is no Chinese whispers. You know what's Chinese whispers? Somebody says something in one person's ear. When it comes to the fourth person's ear, it is something different. It happens in many companies. MBO means every person right from the top management, top person till the peon knows exactly what is the objective of the company. Rather than the old method where is management by sight, which is means I see a person working. He's working very hard. He may be just showing that he's working. He may not be working. Another person is sitting in another table and looking up in the sky. He may also be working. But management by sight, what we used to say, we used to see the activity and then discard people or accept them. Okay. So this is something that they have started adopting. Second point, the second important change affecting HRM was the emergence of the new organization structures. I've already made a mention about it briefly in the earlier part. Through the 80s and the 90s, there was organization structure which changed. Companies expanding their operations and diversifying products and services result clear of central decision-making systems. Central, underline the word central decision. We have learned in Principles of Management, tall organizations. Tall means what? We have on the top CMD, Chairman Managing Director. Below him, there's a board of directors. Then there are VPs, GMs, AGMs. It goes down and down and down, maybe 10 or 12 or 14 levels. When I joined a Tata company as a trainee engineer, I was at the bottommost level, and above me, the works manager, forget about the MD, we had something like 12 staggering levels. So if I have to take a decision, I have to go to my boss in my department. He goes to his boss. His boss goes to the other department from where we need help. And that whole thing used to take a long time. Now it's brought down from so many levels to a small level. It's got a flat organization, right? Flatter decentralized management systems replace the traditional hierarchical organization structures. This is common. Take any IT company, take any company which is IT enabled, a BPO IT company, even banks, we are having flat organizations, right? The third change factor was accelerating market globalization, increasing competition and greater demand from employees, often at diminished levels of compensation. Globalization is taking place. Manpower is reduced in certain companies due to certain reasons. They say, we don't need you. Where 10 people are doing the job, 2 or 3 people are doing the job IT enabled. Right? Good or bad, but this is a reality. To compete abroad, companies were looking for their HRM professional to augment initiatives related to quality, productivity, and innovation. So we had to have the best of the people here who are competing globally. If I have to send an IT engineer from my IT company to, let's say, US or some Australia or some other or Europe, I need to have that quality which they're expecting from us. So obviously, I may not go for numbers, I may go for only quality. Other factors changing HRM include accelerating rate of change and turbulence, resulting in higher attrition and need for more responsive, open-minded employees. This whole thing brought about a change in people's thinking, behavior, etc. My generation, which went through engineering at that point of time, we had a certain way of thinking. And the whole thing changed when IT came. So some of my colleagues from my generation were not able to adapt to this change. So they found that the present way of working is very different from what they think. They get critical about it. They were not open-minded, more responsive to the open-minded changes. They were not. Okay.